sacred space of medicine is the healing relationship. It's that one-on-one where we touch lives, they touch us, they trust me, us, to care for them, advise them, help them. That's the absolute sacred space. That's why people keep doing it even when they're burnt out. When we reduce burnout, I am more present. I can be present in a different way. It makes me have capacity to listen to everything they need to tell me. It helps me not obsess and type about that note and know that it's going to happen. And so I don't bring a worry into the room anymore. I don't bring the worry that I might forget to write something down or I have a note to do later. That's all gone. It's just gone.
Across UVM Health and healthcare organizations nationwide, artificial intelligence is being used for everything from improving user experiences online through the use of AI tools like chatbots to supporting care teams both over the long term and in moments where speed, clarity, and coordination can make a huge impact on clinical outcomes. AI documentation tools like Abridge, which drafts providers' notes during patient visits, help clinicians spend more time with patients. While tools like BoneView, an AI technology used in emergency departments and urgent care clinics to flag likely bone fractures and prioritize care, speed up decisions, improve communication, and reduce unnecessary imaging procedures, especially in rural communities. From administrative offices to operating rooms, billions of dollars are being invested nationwide in developing medical artificial intelligence systems. And more than 40 million Americans ask AI chatbots like ChatGPT healthcare-related questions every day, according to OpenAI, which created the tool. Millions more have concerns about AI tools reading their medical records or even being used by their doctor at all. This week on Living Healthy Together, we'll explore some of the ways medical AI systems are being used across UVM Health, hear from some of the clinical leaders who test AI tools and determine which tools are used and how, and physicians who have seen how AI has impacted patient experience in care and their own experience as providers. I'm your host, Philip Rao, and you just heard from Dr. Alicia Jacobs, a primary care physician, director of well-being informatics for UVM Health, and one of a team of physicians and practitioners who led the health system's rollout of Abridge, an AI technology that takes notes for providers during patient visits and one of the first patient-facing AI tools rolled out by UVM Health. We'll hear more from Dr. Jacobs later in the show, but first let's welcome Dr. Justin Stinnett Donnelly, an internist and hospitalist, chief health information officer for UVM Health, and the co-chair of the Systems AI Council, a group of healthcare professionals charged with evaluating medical AI tools. Dr. Stinnett Donnelly, thanks for joining us. You've got a really interesting mix of expertise. There's plenty of people that are doctors. There are plenty of people that are data specialists. You're kind of both. How did that happen?
Since high school, I've always been interested in medicine, but then I have a very analytical mind. So I actually went to undergrad and got a degree in mechanical engineering. And for a fairly short period of time, worked doing field service engineering as a mechanical engineer. It wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. And so I decided shortly thereafter to make a change and apply to University of Vermont to do biomedical engineering. And then through that program, I was able to get the requirements and applied to medical school and was able to get acceptance into UVM. And so went there from 2006 to 2010. And I became interested in a lot of different things like medical students do. But one of them was around kind of healthcare systems generally. And then also the intersection between electronic systems, the human element, and ultimately how do you deliver care. And I had the opportunity in 2009 to work on the first Epic implementation at Fletcher Allen at that time. And so me as a third year medical student and a whole bunch of fourth year medical students actually delivered training to attendings on how to use this new system that was coming in called Epic. And then we provided at the elbows support to them during the go live period. So that was really my first kind of formal introduction into the electronic health record world. I continued on my training and went to Fletcher Allen for internal medicine and really enjoyed that program. And at the end of it, ultimately decided not to further subspecialize and went into hospital medicine and joined a group at Central Vermont Medical Center providing care to adult patients who need to be hospitalized. So one of my first projects that my hospitalist medical director asked me to help with was the IT department at Central Vermont Medical Center needed to implement computer provider order entry. So really changing the workflow from physicians, APPs, writing down all their orders on paper for it to be transcribed by a unit secretary or a pharmacist, to them directly entering it into the computer. And that really is kind of where informatics is born, because you really have to understand how physicians think and what's going to make it easy for them to effectively make that transition. That's really kind of how it all started.
How has the work around developing and launching electronic medical records like Epic and other tools prepared us for AI and what's happening now? Are we well prepared to navigate this new space, or is there more to learn and pitfalls that we aren't yet aware of?
I think where we are right now is immediately in an opportunity to finally unlock all of the data that we have put into these electronic medical records, electronic health systems, for the past 10 to 15 years. There are lots of good reasons to digitize our health records, but we have not done a great job of making that experience of actually interacting with the health records as a care provider really excellent. We also know that much of the data that we put into an electronic health record may not ever be looked at again by another person. And we've greatly expanded the amount of data that is available without necessarily the tools that are required on the individual care team level to be able to synthesize it down into something that is understandable and actionable. And what's really exciting about the opportunities in front of us really in the next several years to decades is we now are going to have tools that are able to look at all of that data that would take hours and hours or days of reading and synthesizing and documenting. Then you can ideally pull that together really efficiently and also interact with it along the way, where you can ask specific questions about it, or you can get information back. And I think a lot of us see this already if we're using commercially available large language models like ChatGPT or Google Gemini or Microsoft Copilot, in how we just kind of converse with them and get information back. Maybe it's about a recipe, maybe it's about where you want to go on vacation. But the same thing can really happen now with the totality of an electronic medical record and a care team provider, because it's able to bring back that information about that individual that they may not otherwise be able to know. So it's a really exciting point in time to think about, how do you make the experience better for the care team providers? How do you unearth and unlock all of the data that exists for patients? We, of course, need to do it in a secure, ethical, non-biased way, and that we're doing a lot of work to think about how to best do that here at UVM Health. And also, I want to bring the patient into it. So how does the patient ultimately get access to some tools that help them understand their health at a different level? So all of those things right now are absolutely possible. Exactly how it works and what the timeline is what's unknown.
Take us back to the beginning. Where did UVM Health's journey with AI begin?
UVM Health has been using different levels of artificial intelligence for quite some time. We've been using artificial intelligence in radiology to recreate three-dimensional renderings of various T-scans, MRIs, those types of things. We've been using it in a product that helps us rapidly diagnose occlusive strokes in the emergency setting so that we make sure we're routing patients to the right level of care and providing them interventions potentially that need to be decided really rapidly, as far as what kind of medications they're going to get and what kind of subspecialist consultation they need to make those decisions. We've been using that, I think, for years before AI became part of the normal conversation that you might have at a dinner table. And really that changed with OpenAI releasing their first version of ChatGPT. When that happened, that unlocked things that were just more difficult to get access to, right? So if you were a programmer, you already could get access to some of the ChatGPT functions that were there, but it was not an easy thing to do. So when OpenAI did that in 2022, I think it was the fall of 2022, it opened up this entirely new world of large language models. And aren't these things interested? And how do these relate to healthcare? And that's when we started having conversations within UVM Health Network around, we think that these things are going to have really unique opportunities and really unique needs for oversight and governance. And what does that look like? What kind of team members would need to be involved in that oversight and governance? And then we established the AI Council in the fall of 2020.
So tell us a little bit about what the AI Council is, who serves on it, and how it does its work.
Sure. So I co-chair the AI Council with this Chief Nursing Officer Linda Havey, who's our Chief Nursing Officer from Porter Medical Center. And the members of the council are really diverse. We have other informaticists like myself that bring that perspective. We have an ethicist. We have members of our regulatory, legal, and compliance departments. We have members of our IT staff that bring both a security and a technology lens to the conversation. And we also have a patient and family advisor to bring the patient's perspective. Really, the goal of that group is to bring together this diverse collection of knowledge so that we make sure that we're asking the right questions. How do you control for bias? How do you make sure that the outcomes that you're trying to achieve are achieved? And if they aren't, what is a corrective process that will be used? We really try to take a structured approach to ask those questions up front and then invite people back to share how has it gone and what can we learn from it.
Let's talk about Abridge, the ambient AI scribe tool, for a minute. This has to be one of, if not the largest, AI rollout that the council has had. How has it gone, and what have we learned so far about the impact it's making on patients and providers?
Abridge and ambient documentation generally was by far the broadest AI rollout that we have had to date with the largest impact. We really started seeing this technology emerge in the summer of 2024. And we began to look at how would we bring this technology into our environment and connect our physicians and advanced practice providers with it. And so we did a pilot with family medicine providers across our entire organization. We selected 50 providers who volunteered. And at the end of a 60-day period, we took their feedback through our medical group governance structure and ultimately determined that we would move forward with Abridge. And then what we've done since then is just scale it across the entire enterprise. So we started really focusing on primary care as the first use case, and then scaled it across ambulatory specialty, and then scaled in the emergency department. And now we're in the process of scaling within the inpatient area.
It's time for a quick break. When we come back, you'll learn what impact Abridge has had on provider burnout across UVM Health, and we'll sit down with an emergency department physician who sees firsthand how artificial intelligence helps spot potential bone injuries and speed up care in the ED. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together, where we're diving into the use of artificial intelligence in healthcare. We're here with Dr. Justin Stinnett Donnelly, Chief Information Officer and Co-Chair of the AI Council for UVM Health. Dr. Stinnett Donnelly, before we went to break, you were talking about Abridge, an ambient scribe AI tool that takes notes for providers when they're with patients. It started with primary care and has expanded to include ambulatory care, the ED, and is currently being extended into inpatient care as well. So something must be working. What's the impact on patients and providers?
Our primary outcome was ultimately burnout reduction. So for our 50 pilot users, well north of 60% of them had evidence of burnout. By the end of the pilot, that had dropped into the 30s, an absolute reduction of about half. So huge reduction. Nothing that we'd ever seen having that impact before and over a really short period of time. What we didn't know was, is this durable? Is this a blip in time and we will revert back, or is it going to stay low? So we surveyed again at 4 months, and that showed us was that the burnout rate reduced even further. It went down into the 20%. And then we did it at 1 year, and the burnout rate did increase back at 1 year, but that went up to the 30. So nowhere near the 60%+ that we saw when our providers started the pilot. We see similar trends within our specialists as well, that they're having a positive experience. We're also just beginning the process of looking at our learners. We do extend ambient technology with Abridge to our residents and fellows. And what we're seeing is they feel that they have now capacity to dedicate more of their time to learning as opposed to documentation or the administrative tasks of being a resident. And that's really fulfilling because we want to make sure that our residents are having the best experience they can learning these new tools as part of a supervised training experience. But then also, if you can devote more time into the study of medicine and learning within your residency program, that's a win for everybody.
How do you explain the impact of a tool like this? At the top of the show, I played a clip from my chat with Dr. Alicia Jacobs, where she mentions how it took away all of these worries she was bringing with herself into the patient room. That's not something I had ever internalized because I'm not a doctor. What don't people understand about provider burnout and how these pressures impact them?
I think the thing to understand is that when a physician or advanced practice provider is with a patient, they're doing many things all at once. So you're constantly task switching from listening to synthesizing the information, thinking about your differential diagnosis, maybe thinking about potential treatment options, and then flipping back to continuing to listen. Before something like Ambient or Abridge, you add in, some people may be trying to document concurrently in the computer by typing. Some people may be taking notes so that they can then document after the visit. But you have all of these different things competing. When you're utilizing something like Ambient with Abridge, it takes away the need to make sure that you're recording or typing or trying to ingrain in your memory all of the details of what the patient is telling you. And it reduces the amount of task switching that you're doing. So you can purely just focus on the conversation. And I think that is a large part of what actually improves the experience, not only for the physician or advanced practice provider, but also for the patient, because many patients have told us that they feel like, sometimes for the first time, that their physician's fully focused on them. And it's not because the physician was not focused on them before. It was just that the physician was task switching to these other tasks that didn't feel like full focus for the patient. I think that's one of the things that is just really powerful about the technology, that lets you to just be completely present, and you know that someone is taking notes on your behalf, and that the outcome of that will be really beneficial and make you more efficient. The other thing that I think can really help is that in order for that documentation to be really high quality, you need to articulate exactly your thought process, your diagnosis, and your plan back to the patient. And so that act of just being very clear with the patient about all of those things can create a better interaction between the physician or APP and the patient. And then the downstream effect of that is that your documentation is excellent as well.
That's a primer on the emergence of artificial intelligence at UVM Health and how the people closest to care are taking an active role in determining what medical AI tools are ultimately put to work. We'll come back to Abridge later, but right now I want to welcome Dr. Dan Peters, an emergency department physician, clinical informaticist, and chair of the department's technology work group, which is a major avenue for practitioner feedback and ideas about new medical technology, including AI. Dr. Peters, what conversations are physicians and practitioners having about AI right now?
I think there are mixed reactions from physician conversations. You have physicians who are super technology forward, want to embrace it. I definitely fall into that category. I will try new technologies as soon as they're available and approved by the appropriate bodies at UVM. And there are physicians who come with a little bit more skepticism, and then there is probably a cohort of folks who, there's a lot of background jokes of the robots are going to take our jobs, which truly I don't believe. I think we're going to use AI technologies to augment what we're able to do. It's never really going to replace us. You can't replace that human-human conversation and being a patient's navigator through the healthcare system. You know, let people come to the emergency department in times of need for medical emergencies, but also when they don't really know where to go next. And we help people navigate our complex medical system. And that's not something that AI technology is really able to help people do. But the physicians who are a little more skeptical are thinking, all right, with Abridge specifically, we're conducting this recording. What are the medical legal implications of the recording itself? Could these recordings be subpoenaed? And what we're told from Abridge is that they're de-identified after 4 weeks and can no longer be identified and conceivably could not be subpoenaed in a court of law. So there are folks who are worried from a medical legal perspective. And then to some extent, I do think there's a little bit more of the joking about, is AI going to take our jobs? There's a new technology rolled out for radiology called Gleamer. That's a bone detection window for fractures. It provides a preliminary interpretation of whether there's a fracture or not, or it's inconclusive or not after like 30 to 40 seconds of having the image sent to the AI software. And it's pretty good. It highlights area of fracture concern. It certainly identifies like obvious fractures, and the data behind it also looks like it's very sensitive and specific. And so people make comments like, oh, is radiology at risk? And I'm not a radiologist, so I can't speak to all the defenses they have. But I think that they are probably also viewing this, and at least my conversations with some of the radiology informaticists is, these tools are going to be companions for us. They're going to be ways we augment the work that we're able to put out and the ease with which we're able to do it and enhance well-being along the way, and not going to entirely replace the human touch or connection. I always make the analogy about the calculator and about mathematics and how a lot of us were told growing up that, oh, you're not allowed to use a calculator on a test because you're not going to have a calculator in the real world. And now we all have supercomputers in our pockets. And we realistically, on a day-to-day basis, are doing more math than we even realize. We're doing so much math behind the scenes than ever before. And even though we're not performing the calculations physically ourselves, there's a lot more that's being done.
The ED is such a point of confluence. There's probably a lot of intensity. It's probably really fast-paced and really, really diverse. How well does AI operate in that environment?
I'm pretty impressed with how it operates in kind of a more complex, unpredictable environment. Things are noisy. There might be multiple historians in a room. You don't walk in and have an expectation for how the encounter is going to go or what you're going to talk about. You might have a sick trauma patient or a child, and most of the history is being provided by the mother or multiple parents. There might be patients who speak different languages. And the AI, as far as I've noticed, has done a pretty decent job of parsing out who's doing the talking, what the content is. Even if EMS is giving a report, the AI is relatively well able to parse out where the information is coming from. Not necessarily who, but it identifies that it's a third party and that maybe the third person is being used and someone's not saying, this happened to me or I did this. So I'd say in a lot of contexts, including busy, loud triage areas where I'm seeing patients, sometimes it's still able to do a pretty good job of collecting data and then turning it into a usable note.
What are you hearing from patients and families, from visitors and people who are seeing this maybe for the first time when they're in a room with you?
For the most part, really not hearing a lot. Patients, I think in general, expect us to be using cutting edge technology. And when we do, they're appreciative. On a very rare number of encounters, you'll have patients who describe using AI technology too, who then want to opt out of it, which is reasonable. It's usually not something that I dig into too much with patients because it seems like it's a personal preference, but that's got to be less than 1% of all patients that I'm seeing are asking not to use the AI technology. But when I do introduce it, patients are like, all right, let's get started. I'm not here to talk about AI. I'm here to talk about my chief complaint and get out of the ER so I don't have to be here too long. My impression has been patients don't get too hung up on the technology we're using and are more concerned about their immediate care and that we're doing a good job providing that.
I think there is a really strong public narrative, or at least there is in my own head, that these companies move fast and break stuff. That is fundamentally incompatible with the way that people expect healthcare to work. So how does healthcare moderate this tendency from the technology side?
I think there are a lot of filters for technology to get to us, for Silicon Valley to reach healthcare. We rely on some of our bigger health technology companies to do a little bit of that vetting. But even after they do it, we do our own internal vetting. We do beta testing. We have our expert users evaluate these tools for accuracy. We're not just signing contracts and debuting tools without a significant degree of vetting. And I'd say we do a pretty good job of staying towards the cutting edge. I don't think we're the absolute bleeding edge where we are the first healthcare system to be adopting new technologies. I think we're very forward-looking, but at the same time, very thoughtful about how we're implementing these technologies. Things are moving very quickly, but also moving very slowly. 3 or 4 years ago, we didn't have chatbots that were able to synthesize and summarize information at large scales in the same way we do now. No one had heard of ChatGPT or OpenAI in 2020. Or some people I'm sure had, but I wasn't in that group. And we're seeing incredible paces with how these technologies are performing, but at least in the healthcare domain, we're not seeing the rollout of tools that I think are going to be like replacing huge swaths of people. And I think especially in healthcare, the human component is so important, and making human connections is important to patients first and foremost. And I don't think that we're going to see an easy way for technology to replace that. I really do think we're going to see technology augment our abilities, reduce physician burnout, reduce nursing burnout. We talk about physician shortages and nursing shortages. If we use these technologies and enable physicians to practice for 2 or 3 more years because they're not burning out, or nurses to practice for 2 or 3 more years, that means we're enabling our caregivers, which are in short supply, to work for a few more years and not be burnt out along the way. And I think that's a really good thing.
That can have a really big impact when you're looking at these huge structural deficiencies. You can't just flip a switch and find however many more nurses you need to fill this void. I think that that's a huge point that I haven't heard anybody talk about yet.
I completely agree. And I think that's the biggest point that a lot of people aren't talking about. We have a huge deficit of workers in our workforce providing care to people. It's exacerbated in our rural community. And these are the types of technologies that will hopefully help us bridge the gap to being able to continue to provide as much care to as many people at the highest quality as possible.
It's time for a break. We'll be back with more on the emergence of artificial intelligence in healthcare on Living Healthy Together right after this. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together, where we're sitting down with some of the physicians testing and integrating artificial intelligence into clinical practices across UVM Health. We're joined now by Dr. Alicia Jacobs, a family medicine physician and medical director of well-being informatics for UVM Health. Dr. Jacobs, you were heavily involved in the rollout of Abridge, the ambient note-taking AI we discussed briefly earlier in the show, but I want to start with well-being informatics. That's a term I've never heard. Tell us more.
By trade, I would tell you I was an operational expert. I was the vice chair of clinical operations in the Department of Family Medicine for 11 years. I had a side job in informatics for a while. I left it and then rejoined the team 2 years ago. So I've been in informatics, clinical informatics, for 2 years. The actual title of well-being informatics is completely made up by my wonderful boss, Dr. Rachel McEntee, and myself. And it was a vision around how can we use clinical informatics to improve the well-being of our healthcare workforce, particularly our providers. Although I think about all users all the time, I'm technically in charge of providers.
I was actually just talking about this with Dr. Dan Peters, the potential of artificial intelligence to extend healthcare careers and reduce burnout. What do we know about how to address these big structural issues facing healthcare workers?
5 to 10 years ago, we really moved towards understanding the impact of, I'll call it a toxic work environment with an overload of work. The vast majority of how we're going to make the healthcare workforce better is going to be by making their jobs better. It's not going to be by them meditating or, you know, we need to do all that stuff. I need to be able to regroup, replenish. I need to be able to calm my nervous system. I need to be able to take care of myself. But it's just impossible to survive in a constant crisis.
This emerging understanding of wellness has taken place over the last 5 to 10 years. That's concurrent with the rise of AI in healthcare.
Well, even the rise of clinical informatics. I mean, it really started as a discipline a couple decades ago. But as we went to near universal EMRs by, say, the early second decade of this century, you know, in the tens, it became mandatory to have an EMR. And so now suddenly everybody's interacting with patients with this electronic tool and technology in between us. And it wasn't, I think there are good EMR designers out there, but it wasn't necessarily completely designed for the clinician. Think about it. It was designed for the system, and we need to bill and we need to track quality. And so it's not just about the sacred, I'm taking care of a patient, which I actually would argue that whenever we make it about that, we do it the right way. We don't always make it about that. But that's what AI does. Is it allows the space for this.
Let's talk for a second about technology from EMR to AI. These things change our relationships with everything. Do clinicians spend a lot of time thinking about that?
I don't know if I'm an average clinician or not. I am an incorrigible optimist, if you will. You cannot make me not be positive about change or the future. I do strongly believe in redundant systems because we're human and we make mistakes. So I would argue I don't overthink these things, but I think about them a lot. I want to come back to this concept of the sacred space of medicine. And the sacred space of medicine is the healing relationship, right? It's that one-on-one where we touch lives, they touch us, they trust me, us, to care for them, advise them, help them. That's the absolute sacred space. That's why people keep doing it even when they're burnt out. I actually think of AI as, yes, it's about reducing burnout, but it's because when we reduce burnout, I am more present. I can be present in a different way. It makes me have capacity to listen to everything they need to tell me. It helps me not obsess and type about that note and know that it's going to happen. And so I don't bring a worry into the room anymore. I don't bring the worry that I might forget to write something down or I have a note to do later. That's all gone. It's just gone.
That must have been an incredible experience, feeling that for the first time.
So I usually call this magical. For me, it is. Now, I'm a high utilizer and change tolerant. There are people who are not. The people who are more high utilizers, more change tolerant, more tech tolerant, whatever it is, they really have higher EHR satisfaction rates, much lower rates of burnout. And so we want to help everyone use this technology. This is amazing for me to be present with a patient, right? But this is just the tip of the technology iceberg, if you will. Because as we use these ambient listening tools to communicate with the EHR, so now it's going to help cue my orders, cue my visit diagnoses, drop my billing codes, all these administrative things that fill my time. As we go forward, there's going to be less and less of that noise that came with the advent of EHRs. There are things I love about EHRs. I love that I don't have to track down a chart. I love that I have all my data in one place. I love that I can see what happened in the hospital when they were admitted. There are wonderful things about EHRs. And then there are hard things about them. And we want to reduce the hard things so that we can get back to that sacred place of doing what we love to do.
What was that transition like for you and the experience of being able to feel more present in the room with your patients?
That's why I call it magical, because it took all of 5 minutes to learn how to use this technology, which is unbelievable, number one. Number two, it's highly regulated. It is HIPAA compliant. We don't have to worry about Big Brother listening or the intent of the company. I think that AI in healthcare is the best thought out way we have used AI. And so literally within my second session, I'm like, oh my goodness, the weight off your shoulder, going to clinic, not worrying. It was like the roar of silence. It was so noticeable. And I kind of wondered how it would go. I think it really took a month or two to fully kind of decompress, if you will. But, you know, we've studied this, our primary care group. It was those original 50 that did our double crossover study 2 years ago now. It showed sustained reduction in burnout a year. So this is a sustained response. And we did this as a well-being initiative. And so we're really curious about, what has this created capacity for? We know that people, particularly our primary care ones that we've surveyed directly, just have more capacity for other work. So for instance, they're answering their messages. They're doing the other stuff because they're not writing a note. So that's lovely. But I'm going to argue we need to know what else they're doing. So we also surveyed our primary care residents, and they actually report an increased capacity to learn medical topics. How beautiful is that? They're learners trying to learn medicine, and they have more capacity to learn. This is a beautiful thing. I think there's more that I'd like to try to measure. Is there capacity to teach, the capacity to do scholarly work or research, the capacity to be at home with our families more? My guess is that that is sustained, and we don't know entirely if it's more at home or more at work, but it is present still.
You talk about the conversations and the feedback that you've gotten from providers. What are you hearing from patients?
We have not done a systematic study of patients. However, we did get patient feedback during our pilot, and it was almost universally positive. Oh my goodness, I don't feel like a burden to my doctor anymore. Oh my goodness, anything to help them. They seem so stressed out. We did do a survey of patients about their perception of the quality of these ambient AI notes, and they actually thought they were fantastic, as good as provider written notes. There are the outliers who have a suspicion around AI. They are few and far between. They exist more in places where there's not a relationship. It's a really interesting reaction, too, because there's AI used in everything now. AI helps read our x-rays and our imaging. So there's no way to have no AI in your healthcare. It just isn't possible.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back on Living Healthy Together, we'll sit down with a physician and medical ethicist whose job is wrestling with how to balance the promise and risk of artificial intelligence in healthcare. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together. Today, we're all about artificial intelligence as we dive into the emergence of medical AI at UVM Health and discuss some of the tools currently in use in Vermont and Northern New York, the vetting process these things go through before they're put in use, and what the future might hold for AI in healthcare overall. We're joined now by Dr. Tim Leahy, an infectious disease physician and director of ethics at UVM Medical Center. Dr. Leahy, thanks for joining us. Start off by grounding us just a bit in the dynamic between medical ethics and artificial intelligence. AI is obviously relatively new. Does it bring a new wrinkle to medical ethics?
The way I ground AI historically is to think that in medicine, every new paradigm-changing tool comes with incredible promise and incredible risk. And ethics is there to help us make sure we are balancing toward the promise and not neglecting the risks or letting the risks unfairly be borne by one particular population. Like every new technology, there are always early adopters who are just fired up about artificial intelligence and can't think of a thing that could go wrong. And there are the detractors who are pretty sure that this is the end of the world. Typically, the reason why those people are at such polar opposites is that, one, the proponent is focusing just on one part of AI, just the benefits, and the detractor is just focusing on the negatives. What our patients want is nuanced, careful thinking about the pros and the cons of AI, just they would want our physicians to weigh the pros and cons of a medication or a surgery.
There's already been big decisions or big conclusions that have been made that inform how we evaluate and adopt these tools. Where has the conversation already been, and what is settled medical ethics law here?
AI is new, and so anybody who tells you we've got it all figured out is selling you a bill of goods. With that caveat, though, there are some really clear understandings about the ethics of AI. One is there are already excellent data suggesting that there are ways of using AI that can really benefit patients. So for instance, patients really appreciate getting responses quickly and coherently and politely from AI when they reach out for help through the electronic health record. And that's a pretty low risk way of using AI. And so we can benefit patients by using technologies in those sorts of low risk, high impact ways. Similarly, we think that there are people in this world who don't have good enough access to healthcare because of where they live or because of their insurance status. And I think there's great promise that AI can help improve access to healthcare in ways that will benefit our patients. What's also clear is that there's some real risks that AI can scrape through hard drives in a hospital and dig through databases of patient information in ways that are really different from the way a human being would. And so there are serious privacy risks of using AI that we have to be very careful to manage. Another example of risk associated with AI is that we're learning that AI can help a radiologist read an x-ray or help a clinician make a decision. But we are still figuring out where it makes mistakes, where it has a hallucination, in what particular context is it most useful? Are there kinds of clinical puzzles that it's not as good at? And so we have to think about not just sort of throwing our trust willy-nilly in AI in all situations because it's worked in a few situations, but being really careful about, okay, here's a legit use. We're going to go hard in that space because it can help people. And here we're going to hit pause until we have more evidence.
With the AI conversation in healthcare being similar to the way practitioners approach vetting new yet foundationally established medical technologies, are there new nuances or wrinkles? Has AI managed to stand this approach to what's new on its head at all?
This conversation about AI having utility in some situations, but being a little sketchy in others, or just having a question mark next to it, is just like all new technologies. Whenever a new medicine comes out, we usually know that it's helpful for just a very narrowly defined group of people. And then over time, we have to get more evidence to see who else can use it. And we'll do the same thing with AI. Really importantly in AI, it's harder to fully understand its risks and benefits compared to, say, a medicine. When I am as a physician evaluating a new medicine, I can understand how the medicine works. I can read the clinical trial and see who it was used in appropriately and make sure my patient matches that. It's sort of all above board. One challenge with AI is that most physicians and patients and others involved in healthcare aren't fully sure what's under the hood of AI and exactly how it's making its decisions. And that kind of intrinsic opacity can make it a little bit tough for us to understand how it could be helpful or not. The somewhat inscrutable nature of how AI can work deep within its machine innards can make it more challenging for us to anticipate risks or to know that a particular harm is going to come. That requires us to watch even more closely than we would a new medicine or a new surgery to make sure we see how it's affecting our patients' healthcare. And if we realize that it's having an unintended downside or maybe a surprise benefit, that we capitalize on those pieces of information and to make sure we protect our patients. An example of AI having unexpected downsides is that people have used AI to help schedule patients more efficiently into clinical appointments. And in an early model, AI started to deprioritize people who had no-showed previously for appointments. In a way, that kind of makes sense, because if people missed a lot of appointments, why not fill those slots with people who are going to show up? That was, we think, AI's reasoning. The problem is, if you look into who misses appointments a lot, it's people who do not have the ability to leave their job to go to a medical appointment, single mothers, people who live really far away, people who have tenuous transportation. Well, wait a second. I don't want to disadvantage single mothers or people who have to take a bus to the hospital. Wait a second. And so they had to tweak the AI to make sure it wasn't inadvertently disadvantaging people who actually need a little extra support. And so I expect that as the years roll ahead, we're going to have to hold ourselves accountable to watch really closely to see what the scientific evidence is for using AI and also what our lived experience of using AI is to make sure over and over again we're using it for good.
You can't work in healthcare for more than 6 minutes without someone making the joke that the only constant is change. But there is so much changing now. Are we set up for this? This seems like a lot of stress and a lot of moving pieces, even for an ecosystem that is used to a bunch of stuff always moving.
Healthcare has always been a hotbed of innovation, and certainly the pace of the need for innovation is hastening. I think we're all quite unhappy with the perversities of healthcare financing and the ways that it makes it difficult for patients and their caregivers to just do the basic work of doing healthcare right. AI certainly adds complexity to that situation. I can imagine how AI can make our systems more efficient, make our clinicians make better decisions, and offload some of the clerical work of healthcare so that more and more of healthcare involves patients and clinicians looking each other in the eye and making decisions together. And also, I can imagine how AI can make it so that things cost more, make it so that patients have more privacy risks and more computerized experiences. Is it possible that AI could dehumanize healthcare in certain ways? Yeah, that's additional complexity. I think one tried and true aphorism in healthcare is never let a good crisis go to waste. that in the middle of a crisis, healthcare over and over again has found some of its best innovations. As an example, in the battlefield, when medics and surgeons were trying to save people, we created some of the surgical methods that we now use today. War, horrifying though it is, has also been a source of the development and promulgation of penicillin. Here in the 21st century's impending collapse of healthcare system in the United States as we know it, I suspect we're going to have to create new, more fair systems that really work for patients and caregivers. And if we can make that transition go faster and have less clerical burden because AIs are personal assistant, then I think that'd be a great thing. But we're going to have to be really careful that in this crisis, there aren't businesses also taking advantage of the chaos and making us line their pockets.
What does the public need to hear about AI, how we're using it, and how it's being adopted into healthcare?
I think the biggest question people have is, how are you guys managing those pros and cons responsibly? And so I think at the same time that we can trumpet new and exciting ways we're making healthcare more efficient through AI, we have to be really transparent with our patients about the safeguards that we have in place to monitor AI, to make sure it is good to use in healthcare. And we have to be transparent about what we learn en route, just as we share with the public when we learn about a medication side effect that wasn't expected but found after it was released on the market. We're going to have to share the stories not only of the benefits of AI, but also the forms of AI that we said, hey, wait a second, pull back. We're not going to do it like that anymore as new evidence emerges. Most people understand that healthcare workers are human beings using really good but not perfect tools. And as long as they can see us do the homework and use the wisdom that we all have together to make the best of this new technology, I think they're going to trust it more. We're going to trust it more, and we'll build trust in the process.
What are a couple AI tools that have already emerged that have really surprised you in a positive way? And what are the things that are coming down the pike, either short or long term, that you are most excited to see?
I was never surprised to learn that AI could remember things better than a human being could. Of course, AI can cite chapter and verse from the medical literature better than a finite human with an imperfect brain ever could. What surprised me a little bit is that there have been some studies looking at AI companions interacting either in text form or in a computer-generated video with patients and in a trusting and compassionate way that patients actually found acceptable. I don't think that this is going to make it so that AI just completely replaces human delivery of healthcare, but I do think it's going to raise some really interesting questions about what kinds of interactions really demand face-to-face, in-person human interactions, and in what ways can a really sophisticated AI make it more efficient for the healthcare system to deliver the right care for everybody all the time. Maybe I would be perfectly happy to have my phone call about rescheduling or a refill answered by this incredibly polite, incredibly accurate, incredibly not human receptionist. But if I get the news that I have a life-limiting diagnosis and I'm feeling tearful and afraid, I am sure that I want a human nurse or a human doctor at my side to help me work it through. Where those boundaries are, I think, is going to be something we figure out in the next decade. Most people have heard that there's a really big conversation in the news media in Vermont right now about affordable care. I think it's good that the Green Mountain Care Board is trying to figure out how hospitals can be more efficient with their resources. And I think it's good that hospitals are clarifying for the Green Mountain Care Board the realities of healthcare delivery today. That dialogue can only be better. I'm hopeful that the ability of AI to do clerical work really quickly, really efficiently, really accurately is going to take some of the inefficiency out of the system, so that we have a bigger pot of money to work with to be able to provide care for our patients. As we do that, we need to be really careful to make sure that those efficiencies in the delivery of care work for all Vermonters, and that we're not just having the most wealthy, most well-plugged in patients in our population just getting better and better care, but also folks who have had challenges accessing care in a timely fashion will especially be prioritized for the benefits of AI. That's a promise we need to make to our communities.
That's all the time we have today on Living Healthy Together. Thanks to all our guests for sharing their stories and insights. If you're out there listening and have a question, comment, or idea for a future episode, email us at healthtalk@uvmhealth.org. Living Healthy Together is also available as a podcast. If you're interested in checking out some of our past episodes, look us up wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow, subscribe, and consider giving us that 5-star rating, which really helps a lot. I'm your host, Philip Rao. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.